1039 1450 WKXL and our new signal in Manchester, 1019. We welcome you to In Touch with Cale and Cormier. A delight to have you along with us. And a delight to have in studio today the one and only Scott Spradley.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Oh, my gosh. I'm doing great.
Awesome.
How can you not be on a beautiful day like this when, as we were talking just a moment ago, Boston sports teams are especially looking good, especially if you're a Red Sox fan. Ken, nice hat.
Thank you. It's my camo Sox hat.
I like it. That.
But you know what? We were talking off the air just before we started rolling here. And we have been so spoiled, over the last 20 years, let's say. 20 years?
Yeah.
Really?
We're so good at this, we take over other teams. Because how many people are kind of still quasi-cheering for the Tampa Bay Bucks with Brady there?
I am, of course.
So it's like you've got multiple favorite teams, and when they win, it's our success.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. We just sort of usurp all the success in pro sports. We're good at this.
The rest of the country thinks we're gluttons.
Well, it is the hub of the sports nation. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
We have been spoiled. And anybody who complains about, down season, I mean, the Red Sox had a down season last year, but nobody cared. They only played 60 games anyway.
That's right. That's
thank
right.
God.
It was a warm-up for this season. Yeah.
Patriots were woeful last year. Anything they can do this year is better.
That's right.
Sure.
And they're getting better all the time.
Yeah,
I know they've had some tough losses. But nonetheless, we're not here to talk about the Boston sports scene. We're here to talk about Scott Spradling.
Because, oh, my goodness.
You know, Scott, one of the most recognizable faces and voices in the state of New Hampshire. But somebody I really don't know a whole lot about. Where are you from originally, Scott?
So I'm a mutt. I was born in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I spent early childhood in South Florida and then in Tallahassee while mom and dad both went back to school. I'm a product of two music teachers at the college level.
Bless you.
So there it is. So product of two teachers, both went back for advanced degrees at Florida State, and then they had a couple of options of where to go. I ended up in Syracuse, New York, where dad and mom both taught at SU. And long story short, I ended up in the broadcasting program at SU. Yeah. And once I graduated, I didn't have a home after I graduated because dad took another job the year I graduated from college and moved to Michigan. And I like Michigan, but not enough to live there. So I had to figure out what to do.
Ouch.
I either put roots in Central New York where the job market wasn't so hot, or I played the geography game, moved out to New England, stayed with some friends in Massachusetts and thought, if I can drive 2 hours in any direction and be in one of six different states, I'm bound to find a job in radio.
Yeah.
And I did in WGIR in Manchester.
Awesome.
That was how I got started.
And that was your first stop at GIR.
That was it. I cut my teeth on the radio waves down in Manchester, worked there for 2.5 years, and then started my TV career at WMUR and did 12 years there.
Wowie zowie.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing you moved to New England.
Oh, it definitely is. I have zero regrets. I absolutely love living in New England.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
So another Syracuse broadcaster.
I mean, there are
so many good ones.
What is with that?
Out of Syracuse.
Okay,
really, they're the top-of-the-line guys, like Scott, from Syracuse.
I appreciate that. Yeah. It was great fun. It was a wonderful experience. A lot of good hands-on education and Syracuse gets all the credit, but if I'm going to be fair, and this is for my friends Jamie Staten and Gene Mackin, who both work at Channel 9, they're Ithaca grads, and their broadcast journalism career is just as strong, and their quality of education was just as good. Mm-hmm. They just don't get all the attention as Syracuse does.
I see.
And that's true. But Syracuse does get a lot.
There's no doubt about
that, and justifiably so. They've had some of the great broadcasters.
Ted Koppel, Bob Costas. I mean, it goes on and on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And back farther than that as well, yeah.
Huh?
But did you go to Syracuse with any big names in broadcasting now?
You know, actually, I did not. There was a good stretch. I do have some friends that are still in the business, a couple that are on the desk out in California on TV, and then a few folks that are in radio, sports radio and talk radio throughout. But no gigantic household names, just a lot of folks that are making good contributions.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, believe it or not, that spent some years behind the microphone doing the kind of work you guys do every day and then deciding at some point, like I did, I'm going to try a different path. Similar parallel maybe, but something different.
Good.
And getting into like the consulting and PR kind of world, which you ask a couple of my coworkers at Channel 9 when I would turn my nose up at the idea of being handled by a PR person when I'm showing up to cover something, and now I am one of those people.
Yes.
Kind of ironic.
There you go.
But I try to take the lessons of what I learned in the news business and apply it to what I do now.
Wow.
So that I try to make it a win-win.
Yeah.
So both your parents were musical.
Yes, sir.
Jane is a music teacher, has her own opera company.
I love it.
Kat, her daughter, and our producer has an amazing, amazing voice. I can't honestly say I've ever heard Jane sing, but I've heard Kat many times.
Well, this is great. I don't know why we're talking.
I'm the only one
singing.
Who doesn't know a thing about music.
No, you know plenty. You love the arts. You support the arts. You go to concerts.
I enjoy it.
What good?
I enjoy
can't
it.
Do
Listen,
anything if we don't have people to sing to.
Every performer needs someone to introduce
That's
them.
That's right.
So you've got those golden pipes for that. I'd say you're right just fine in your lane. You're doing just fine.
Okay. I'm going to stay in my lane.
Okay.
I'm not going to sing. I'm staying in my lane. And speaking of that, Scott, you know, former TV great at WMUR. He's in the WMUR Hall of Fame. Well, I mean, if they had one.
That's
he
very
would be there. You know, radio guy, started at GIR. What year did you start at GIR?
93. So I did 93 through 96 in radio, and then 96 through 2008 in TV.
Cool.
Yeah. And I've been doing this PR thing since then.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I left GIR and went 76, 76, 77. So, yeah.
Yeah, we heard all about your story a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
That was a great show. I learned so much about you at that point. Have you heard his beginnings?
No.
He has some great beginning stories.
Some great beginnings.
Awesome.
But we're here to talk about Scott.
I got it.
I want to hear about
Scott. I'm off topic.
I'm here all the time.
I'm here all the time. So you want to hear about Scott Spradling, GIR, WMUR. And so you were there for 12 years at WMUR.
Yes, sir.
And did many things politically. I'm sure you've interviewed many presidents over the years or presidential wannabes.
It's been a run. People will ask, so what were a couple of pinnacle moments?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would have to say, and this ends up being the obvious, so when you're the political reporter in the first of the nation, that's what I was.
Holy moly.
I was the political reporter, and then I did the 5 o'clock news and co-anchored the 5 with Gene Mackin. So I sort of wore two hats, but primarily the reporting was with politics. And so when you are in the first in the nation primary state, in a state that only has one TV station, and it happens to be statewide, that basically means that if you're running for president, your very favorite person on the planet for a very narrow window of time is the guy that runs around with the microphone from the TV station. So it was a wonderful experience because I always felt like every few years I was at the center of the cyclone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you really get a chance in this situation to see and get to know and really size up these men and women who are running for president. So I have some wonderful memories, but they also lead to some extraordinary pathways. So the pinnacle of I would say, my career as a political reporter would have to be the opportunity to interview newly sworn in President George W. Bush in the Oval Office.
Wow.
I got a chance to go to D.C., interview him in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And it's the single most humbling and mind-blowing moment because if you're following politics and you're kind of into it, and in New Hampshire, it's almost like our fifth sport, sixth sport, right? It is amazing to be able to walk into the room where so many important and incredible things and so many important, incredible men and women have spent time and made important decisions that have charted the course of our entire country's existence.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Good
and it was it was a crazy 15 minutes. And so this will show the kind of relationship that you develop with people off camera.
Yeah.
So long story short, we get in through security. We get over to the West Wing. We're in the conference room and then the outer office room right outside the Oval Office. And you know you're right outside the Oval Office because there's a door with a very obvious curved wall.
Okay.
So you know you're right there. So I'm talking to the receptionist, was talking to Karen Hughes, who was one of his campaign aides and then was in the White House briefly. And we're catching up and reminiscing because at this point it's been several months since I've seen him. From primary to being sworn in, number of months.
Yeah.
So we're catching up. I end up having my back towards the doorway to the Oval Office. I hear the door open behind me, and then all of a sudden I hear this, "Scotty!" And I turn around, President of the United States, both arms up like he's signaling
Isn't
a touchdown,
that great?
Wow.
Saying, "Welcome to the White House." It was an incredibly awesome? Warm moment.
Yeah.
And it was great because I walked through the door. He and I had lovely memories together. I was chasing him around on the campaign trail in the primary.
I bet.
And, you know, the relationship between candidate and media is a complicated one because there's a lot of jousting. But there's also just a lot of time spent together.
Yeah.
And you get to know people. So you develop the relationships off of mic.
Mm-hmm.
And I did with him as well.
That's
very much awesome. Enjoyed his presence. He's one of those kinds of people that if you had to rank presidents that you'd want to go to a bar and have a beer with,
mm-hmm.
he's going to be right there at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Well, you have to say, I mean, whether you liked him or not or what party you were with,
you bet.
He was always warm and
always.
Engaging.
Super
really.
Charismatic.
Absolutely.
Very genuine.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could, again, you can take sides on the politics of George W. Bush and his administration,
sure.
the history, and the books will take care of that. But when it comes to the kind of person he was, you know, he would mean what he said. He said what he meant. He wasn't the most polished speaker.
Right.
He wasn't the most articulate guy. But he was genuine, he was authentic, and he was someone who could convey what he felt about certain things.
Totally.
You may not like the language, but he was authentic. And that made him very easy to work with and interact with and interview because you felt like, okay, I may not agree with what I'm hearing, but I know this is what the guy believes, and my job is to help him share what he believes
right.
to people that have to make the ultimate decision.
Indeed.
So that made the exercise, to me, a pretty easy one.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it was fun.
You know what? New Hampshire, again, we were talking about spoiling in New England, you know, with all our sports, right? Folks out there, if you haven't been able to participate in the election brouhaha that comes up every primary,
Good
right?
Word.
You should, because we, unlike any other state, you can go and meet anybody that's running in a personal way.
Yep.
And, you know, for like 8 years, just from my little service in the State House, I get invited still to all these events that come up. And I have been able to meet so many political, pundits or candidates.
Yeah.
And like you said, in a little bit of a, you know, not on stage moment.
Yeah,
and
it's awesome, Jane.
It is. It's, and anyone can do it.
I mean,
what other state can you say that's true for?
Which is exactly why I will argue until I'm out of oxygen why New Hampshire should stay atop the list.
Totally.
You can set up a rotating regional system where a bunch of states get their turn to be up to the front of the list, which I'd say is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot replicate the kind of economy, accessibility, and engagement by voters that you get right here in New Hampshire.
There is no doubt.
So, and I understand that we are an racially not exactly a diverse state, but we have plenty of diversity in many different places in our state.
Yes,
you can have the very same conversations from the very same people who are impacted in many of the same
totally.
Ways. And if you're going to talk about racial and cultural divides and challenges, there is no one state that's ever going to encapsulate
everything.
All of the
that's
things.
Right.
So you start in the place where someone who's an underdog in a small budget who needs to be able to get in maybe an Uber from place to place,
yeah.
totally on the thin dime of figuring out how you just get from place to place
right.
and get in front of people in a way that's low
and
cost
and
user
that.
Friendly.
Totally.
Absolutely. That's how Jimmy Carter became
yeah.
president.
Isn't that amazing? And yet there are still so many, there are people still in the state that talk about changing that status.
I know.
I don't understand why we're even talking about that if you're in New Hampshire. Why
yeah.
would you touch it if it ain't broke?
I agree.
Leave
I
it.
I totally agree.
You know?
Yeah, great place to run a grassroots campaign.
It
how
is.
Many states can claim that?
That's right.
Very
and,
few.
And when you've got 80% of a state's population within roughly a 2 to 3 hour drive
yep.
of any one spot, you're making it accessible.
That's right. You can do it.
You can definitely
yeah,
do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No
this is a great opportunity
it.
For everyone, for the citizens to get involved in the political process and
yeah.
really understand their candidates and to be able to offer the candidates the availability to get their message out to the public.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be.
You bet. Do you mind if I tell you one other story from the days
you
of the campaign
You can tell us
trail?
As many stories as you like,
okay.
Scott. As so many as you like.
This is one that I might entitle Setting the Record Straight. I don't know who would remember back in the 2008 campaign. This was when I was working for WMUR, and MUR and ABC News teamed up for a national debate. And I worked with Charlie Gibson from ABC, and this was literally in the last days of the 2008 presidential primary. So this is, if you remember, Barack Obama versus Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side of the aisle. And then, of course, you had John Edwards on. I mean, there were other some rock star candidates there, but it was really the clash of the titans between Obama and Clinton. So if you'll recall, I'll just do a quick reset. Barack Obama had upset Hillary in Iowa and had a lot of momentum coming into New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, there's only 8 days between that result and the next competition. Right. So the entire theme of that week was, can she overcome? Is this thing done? If Obama wins New Hampshire, this is over. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And I had this unbelievable career opportunity to co-host these debates with Charlie Gibson.
Yeah.
And I can't say enough good things about the man. I loved how he handled himself. He was humble but smart. He was articulate, strategic. And his goal was the goal that I would hope anybody would have for a presidential primary debate. And that is, stay as far out of the way as you can. Mm-hmm. Let the candidates give answers. Ask questions that are direct but not jerky. And let them mix it up a bit.
Awesome.
And don't get in the way. And don't let the lights and buzzers of a 30-second deadline interrupt flow.
Right.
So try to balance it out as best you can.
Right.
Don't interrupt the flow. And so, and I was so sold on the whole thing. So flash forward to where we're at with these last hours in the day before. And I knew a question that I wanted to ask Hillary Clinton for days before we had the debate. And it was essentially asking her a question about likability. And that what I was seeing showing up in the polls and what I was hearing in the vibe was that, man, no one was going to be questioning Hillary Clinton's resume and capabilities to do the job. It was whether they liked her enough to elect her to the job. And on the flip side, Obama's resume as a U.S. senator was way thinner, but they loved the guy. Charismatic, someone that, you know, you just, I'm going to follow this dude. You know, a lot of Democrats and independents were so excited about him. So it was the clearly ready versus the super popular. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask about likability. And the first half of the debate, which I didn't participate in, was a real like slugfest between John Edwards, Obama, and Hillary. If you didn't know any better, and I would ask you to go back and look at the highlights, if you didn't know any better, it almost felt like Edwards and Obama had decided ahead of time to kind of team up on her. Because the way
that
the debate, maybe, but the way the debate was unfolding, it seemed like the two of them were criticizing her and she was having to take it from different sides. And she was bruised and battered coming into the second half of the debate, which I participated in. And I would get the first question. So I wanted to put this right to her, right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And Charlie Gibson did not like the idea at all. He did not want me to do it because he was worried that it might come off as a journalistic grandstand. Like, oh, so you're quoting polls and you're talking about likability. And he was really worried about, like, asking the question and being offensive and just kind of being jerky, which he wanted to avoid.
Right.
He wanted it to be issue-driven and conversational and, and free-flowing. And he was worried.
Well,
and
that has to do with how you word the question, not what the question is.
And that's what I said to him, and I just assured him that I could do this in a way that was not going to be offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can look it up on YouTube because it's all over the place.
Oh, my.
And it basically was, what can you say to the people on the stage? What can you say on the stage tonight to the people of New Hampshire who see your resume and like it, but they simply like Barack Obama better? That was how I worded it.
Okay.
And she paused for a minute, and she said, well, that hurts my feelings, Scott. And the place erupted, right? And it was just, you know, everybody's laughing, and but I will try to continue on. And here I am. I'm sorry, Senator. I'm apologizing. And she jumps in, and she said, I'm pretty likable, right? I'm likable. And that's when Obama is, like, taking notes, and he looks over, and he goes, you're likable enough, and keeps going. And that became the moment. And what Obama didn't know is that there was a split screen during that moment so that the people at home were watching Hillary saying, I'm likable. And he's almost dismissively writing and says, yeah, you're likable enough. And he didn't mean it that way, but it came across that way. And there was a lot of momentum that shifted in those last hours, and Hillary won New Hampshire. Now, what people think,
the split screen, you think, did that?
I think that was a big factor.
Wow,
and I think how she handled the question, it wasn't the question.
Yeah, she made
it
humor.
Was the answer.
And she made it
she
humorous,
turned it
right?
and owned it. And the entire rest of the night belonged to her. She had strong answers and she did well.
Wow,
I think she turned it around in that
she
moment.
She did, yeah.
And people think that there are a lot of Democrats out there who think that I am the bad guy with the dark hat who was trying to pin her to the wall and get her and blah, blah. And what ended up happening was I threw her a nice, easy softball and she knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
She did what she was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And here's my proof, because people still don't believe me to this day. So I won't name names, but one of the senior people on the Clinton team saw me the next night, because I'm back on the trail just doing my job, and she came running up to me and gave me a huge hug with big thank yous. Yeah. Oh, my God, thank you for that question and how you did it. And she was so happy with me, meaning Senator Secretary Clinton, that she autographed a picture of mine that I had with her that said to Scott from Hillary, you are likable. So she had a great sense of humor about it, and she recognized that it was a great turnaround moment. Now so they look at that as one of the key moments in the last days.
Isn't that funny?
Of how she won New Hampshire.
Yeah. We have the very likable Scott Spradlin here in studio today. It's In Touch with Kale and Cormier on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, and 101.9 in Manchester. And, of course, New Hampshire Talk Radio. .com. Back with more Scott Spradlin right after these important messages. 103.9 1450 WKXL and 101.9 in Manchester. We have a new stick, as they say in the business.
Oh, is
new
that stick. What they say?
That's what they say in the business.
I'm sorry, I didn't know
just
what that
like
was.
Just like the
stick
we have out back here.
Okay.
Yes. But this one's in
a
Goffstown.
New stick.
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Welcome, Manchester.
That's it. That's it to WKXL. Manchester will never be the same.
Oh, my gosh.
With all the great programming we have on WKXL, including Celtics basketball. So there you go.
Isn't love that awesome?
All season long. And lots of great local coverage as well. Our guest in studio on In Touch with Kale and Cormier is Scott Spradlin, who put Hillary Clinton over the top.
Well,
we've got him to blame for it.
That's the other risk to having the conversation is you either get blamed for being mean or blamed for getting her to succeed.
And so I'll tell you what I got from your stories. What I loved about it is that if the journalist is doing their job right, and they are staying out of the way, either side can claim it.
That's it.
Right?
That's exactly it.
So
I
you
agree.
Did that. You
I did
that. So yeah, no, that's a lot of hooey. And I
agree.
Well, I mean, it's honest, right? The bad thing that's happening today, and I think that most people see it, even if they don't speak of it, is that is not happening today.
No.
And it's killing the process. Yep. People are shutting down because they just can't stand either side polarizing the discussion. When did we stop being able to have an even discussion? We can disagree.
Yes.
What the heck is that?
Right.
This is United States of America. Hello.
Isn't that the learning process?
Hopefully.
Right.
People
critical
remember
thinking.
That. Yes.
And testing your theory against others' beliefs and data in front of you, and you all move forward together.
We're squishing it. We're squishing it out of the public sector, and that needs to stop. But fast, because we're killing the process, and isn't that what it's all about?
I agree. You know what my single strongest example that I bring forward in the conversation about media and the conversation going in the wrong way, I think many times, especially at the local level, but also at the national level, I think many times we're shooting the messengers.
Yes.
The media becomes the scapegoat. But... if you go to right now on your phone, don't stop listening to this radio show because Ken and Jane need you. But when you grab your phone and go to any news app, I don't care where your belief is, any of the news apps of the mainstream media, I guarantee you within the first half dozen of the story links that you've got, you have a clip of the news story basically being one of their anchors saying something about what's going on in the world. It is a commentary moment. That is not news.
Right.
That's commentary.
But that's
general
public.
But that's what they're
public,
shoveling out there.
Indeed. And the public, you know, who's trying to work three jobs to make ends meet with their three kids or whatever they've got going on, that clarity is not being espoused out there. The truth is that what used to be, even 15 years ago, I mean, you used to be able to have some sort of confidence that the newscasters or the people that were delivering the news at least were giving a fair shot to honest discussion.
I agree.
That is not happening. And what is hard news is now commentary.
Oh, that's exactly
and
all it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's cheaper to produce and they've
playing
got
24 ratings.
Hours of news and it's all about ratings. And it's really frustrating because the line has been blurred between journalism and the people out there trying to find out what's going on and reporting what we need to know about process, about people, about decisions, about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then those who are sitting in the studio all day long offering their thoughts on it
like
we care.
Yeah.
And there are places for thoughtful commentary in the discourse.
Of course.
But not as a constant, steady drip of hip shot response in real time.
Absolutely. And
we don't need that.
So when you said that, you know, they're shooting the messenger, I disagree with you a little bit on that.
Fair
because
enough.
If you were an honest journalist, a real journalist, you would be very clear to make sure that distinction was clear.
I agree.
By telling the audience, you know, this is backed up by such and such.
Yeah.
You know, this is, or show clips that define what it is, whatever side you're on, instead of, you know, the hubris of, well, you know, this is what they're saying out there, right? This is what we're, you know.
Which we've had a lot
of
in the last several years.
Yes.
And increasing numbers. I mean, we've got a New Hampshire example, and I'm not picking on him. It's the New Hampshire example of late with State Representative Ken Wyler, who was in charge of House Finance, in charge of the Fiscal Committee, who was disputing the essential vaccination, hospitalization rate numbers of vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Right.
And essentially, I'm cutting corners on the storyline, but essentially when asked to cite your source and where are the facts of this, he sort of ephemerally sort of went to, well, I heard it on talk radio, and then followed it up with a
sign
very long email that had quotes and clips and stuff from places that were not reputable news sites or even areas of data where this is an easy question to answer.
Of course.
And it, to me, it becomes the example. And I'm not picking on Ken, but to me, one of the best retorts to any back and forth we would ever have in a newsroom about what stories of the day to cover, what the angle of that story would be, what are the facts backing up your claims, is that when there was a difference of opinion around the news table, people would start saying, well, it's this. No, it's that. It's black. It's white. It's green. It's gray. Well, cite your source. Where are you getting this information so we can lay that side by side?
Right.
And those lines have even been blurred because of social media and because there are people that are out there that can use the kind of equipment we're surrounded with right now and make it look by all visuals
like it's real.
Like a complete up and up organization. And they're making it up as they go, just like a lot of other people would.
Yep.
So
you're not wrong.
It's difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. And yet that's such an important exercise. And to your point, the three job, three kid, I'm going 100 miles an hour. I just need you to tell me what's going on unfiltered.
Right.
That's a hard exercise to get right
now. It is. It's very hard to get right now. And I think that you're not going to really find that because, like you said, the ratings and where we are, it's kind of like just out there as a country, is that they're feeding like the monster of whatever the high tail is that they want to tell, you know, at the moment. But this is, I think, where vacuums can be filled if we have decent community programming out there.
Oh, gosh,
because you're right when you say, you know, anybody can have this equipment and you can put together, right? The other side of that is that all of the resources or many of the resources that might be available to the bigger, you know, network, whatever, those, you can go online and find out an awful lot if you have time, right?
Certainly.
So maybe if we had... you know, community radio struggling right now. Everything community is struggling right now.
I mean, look at newspapers.
Right now. Of course.
You know, it's tough out there.
It's
and
tough.
Yet it's such an important local resource.
Right.
It's essential because if we're not doing it, then you don't have eyes and ears
of
an objective, neutral source sharing with you what's going on.
Right.
I mean, just look now. If it's not on a Facebook Live broadcast or on community access, you're not getting the news coverage of the local meetings the way we used to maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
And it's ironic because social media should open doors to ensure that we've got access to anything whenever and however we want, remotely or otherwise. And yet the economics of media has forced the conventional and traditional media sources to have to reconfigure how they make money and stay alive.
Absolutely.
And it is a struggle that has not been solved just yet.
Yeah, we're still figuring it out. Last week on Artful Living, I had the executive director for the public access station here in Concord, and we were discussing that about the opportunities that station could offer Concord and how the finances – the reality of financially, you know, making that happen is so difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Honors,
absolutely.
You know?
Because you're talking about how do you define the return on investment.
Right.
Because the traditional return is you're in the black.
Right.
You're making money.
Right.
But there can be a for the community good return on investment. That means you're going to make an investment and not expect a financial return on it, that the return is now anyone who wants it can have access to the information.
Yeah, right.
Now, listen, that to me doesn't necessarily guarantee access to the microphone, mm-hmm. but it's access to the information. And I think there need to be some rules of engagement there, because not everybody who lives everywhere should be able to access any little thing that they want to.
Okay.
There has to be some skin in the game.
Yeah.
And so that – so let me give you an example. So let's say there's a hot button issue going on at the State House that most certainly affects a number of communities in New Hampshire. I know it's tough to imagine, right?
Yeah, right.
Gosh, Scott. Wait, are we still with me?
Which one are we talking about?
Right? Either side. Doesn't even matter.
Right.
Hot button political issue.
Right.
One of the things I hear about the pushback of remote access, and let me tell you, I am a firm believer in what we're seeing, like from the various service agencies, like Granite State Independent Living, sending a letter to the House and Senate leadership saying, please keep the door for remote access open and alive, mm-hmm. so that folks in our community can still be a part of it. Because they've been clamoring for it for years. They finally got it, and now it's about to be ripped away. I agree with them.
Yep.
Give them the access.
Yep.
But there has to be relevance to your presence. You cannot be sitting in Boulder, Colorado, and expect to be able to weigh in on a legislative community debate in Concord, New Hampshire.
Okay.
There has to be some relevance to it all. Now, if you're a New Hampshire resident,
how do you promote that, though? How do you?
I don't know.
But my
point is that we still have to have a conversation about the rules of engagement, because what I think we've seen in some of those hot button issues over the course of the last 12 months from legislative leadership is you can get a cast of thousands to cover to show up to a hearing. And you got to stop somewhere. At some point, you have to draw the line to who can get in and talk and who shouldn't. And if you're all doing this remotely, there should be a way to prioritize the voices that are local and most impacted first.
So
that's
you can
my
do
argument.
That. You can actually do that.
You can't guarantee that everybody's going to be able to have a voice,
but they
should have access.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. But, you know, when you go to the State House and you sign up to speak at the meetings,
you
do have to sign in.
Yes,
and you
do.
You have to tell them where you're from.
Absolutely.
So it's not like those thousands are all coming from Massachusetts.
That's right.
Much of the time here in New Hampshire, that's not the case.
And it's not okay to expect that 1,000 people are going to sign up and we're going to now listen to a public hearing of 1,000 people.
Yeah,
just because you get access doesn't mean you get a turn.
Okay.
That's my point.
Yeah. Because that could be quite impossible.
Yeah. And it just wouldn't be that hard to be able to delineate that and use technology to our benefit and still promote the local access and the kind of community. Because I'm Jane, to go to your original point, what you're doing here is so essentially important.
Yeah, I know.
Local
it
people,
is.
Community radio, community media, it's essential.
I absolutely know that that's the answer. I mean, when people are out there talking about this isn't America anymore, I know that's a far-flung thing. I happen to believe it's true. But I think it's because we have not held on to the community presence, to like the things that we can manifest on the low grassroots level. And if we're not doing that, we lose connection to everything. Your republic is based on interaction. You don't have a republic if you do not engage the people in the grassroots part of your communities.
Yeah, and I'll give you one extra step. Rules of engagement matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just so that you can talk. You got to listen, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there has to be some willingness to sort of
the
objectively
dialogue
listen
is
to
everything.
The other side. Yeah. And the debate over, I mean, what was the phrase? Was it alternative facts?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a problem. Like, the old saying that you're entitled to your own opinion but not your own facts.
Okay, you're right. But that comes out in the debate.
It does, or at least it should.
We have
the
debate.
I don't know that it necessarily has.
Look at what's
recently.
Happening in school boards right now in New Hampshire is that there is a push, and I've seen it in so many communities, to just sit down and shut up. And if you don't talk for exactly 2 minutes and it's on the agenda, if it's off the agenda what you want to talk about, you can't speak. They are saying this. I've seen places where they've actually locked people out of meetings. Okay? Was there to see. Locked people in the community out of their school.
So the only flip side to that, I'll say, though, Jane, is that you've also got a lot of people coming in hot, rudely, and not being a part of the discourse that you got to have some rules of engagement.
So what does the rule of engagement have to do with the fact that you're going to shut down the dialogue? Of course we need rules of engagement, but you have got to let the debate start. and we have.
So that's fine.
Absolutely, but
my point is, okay. So if we're talking about vaccine versus not vaccine, which is where a lot of the heat is right now around it.
Right.
What I'm seeing is people coming in so angry, they're trying to disrupt the meeting.
Okay.
Which gives the school board a bunch of volunteers. It gives them no choice but to either end the meeting, end the public part of the dialogue, or find some way to just move on without the debate having been held.
Or sometimes they just use the littlest bit and shut it all down because then they say, okay, well, you know what? We're going to just take that and shut it all down because it's convenient to do it. And I have seen that as well.
Okay.
So we're saying both sides here are valid.
Just give us the rules of engagement.
Indeed.
And respect the rules.
100% agree with
that. I'd be totally fine with
that. But see, the thing is if we do not allow the discussion, people do get angry.
Yeah.
Does that mean
which
you
is totally
cuss?
Fine.
Right. You,
totally
you can't
fine.
Cuss. You can't be disrespectful. No. You can't, you know, hurl invective. But you know,
I'm also not crazy about going to people's houses and protesting out on their lawn.
Okay. Right. Well,
don't you think that's a bridge too far?
Absolutely. But the debate on some of that, you know, back and forth, and I don't know. I know what you're talking about, but I don't know if it's true because there is the side saying that it wasn't happening there, that it was happening on the public sidewalk.
Oh,
so
that's garbage.
All right, whatever. I mean, that could be. That could be. But that was out there too.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm enjoying this.
Are you having a good time,
Ken? This is one of the best radio shows I've heard in a long time. Really.
We're into it.
It's in touch with Cale and Cormier, mostly Cormier, and our guest. That's great. No, you guys are great. And Scott Spradlin is here, a longtime WMUR reporter. We'll take a break. We're at 103.9 1450 WKXL and 101.9 in Manchester. And don't forget nhtalkradio.com, where you get all the great programming here on WKXL. 103.9 1450 WKXL, 101.9 in Manchester. No, I was enjoying the previous segment. I really was. I like it when Jane gets fired up.
Oh, it's my goodness. Great.
And these are conversations that have to be had.
You mean you still like me?
Of course I do.
Oh,
you haven't said anything.
No, this is great.
Didn't you start the whole thing off by saying people have to be able to disagree?
I agree with you.
We actually haven't really disagreed over anything yet.
No, we haven't. But you know what? My manner, it can be very passionate. And
passion is what makes the world go round.
A lot of people don't like it. And so I have to keep reminding me. I have to hold it back.
No, don't hold back. Don't hold back. It's good. It's good radio.
Yeah, there's passion all the way around.
I'm enjoying it.
There you go. I like you. I think you're a great guy. So I just want everyone to know if I'm passionate. It's not because I'm really upset.
Thank you, Jay.
But just to give you an example of what Scott was talking about with local radio, specifically, when you were at GIR, how many people were there in the newsroom?
Oh, gosh. So back in the day? There were six of us.
Yeah.
Six of us on an AM radio station. We had two morning anchors. You had a morning news reporter. There was an afternoon news reporter. There were two part-timers.
God.
Absolutely. And then that's not even including sports. So, we had a crew of about 10 people just
what
doing AM
news. What are they
doing
news. Now, do you think?
So a couple of them are still in the business. Most of us are out. And the current lineup is gone. I mean, most talk radio is one or two people tops, and they're having to wear multiple hats. So it's nothing like what it was.
I will bet there's nobody, no one person that is doing news a full day. I mean, it's like a part-time person, or that's a part-time part of their job, just a small part of their job.
You might get to the biggest cities and the radio news programs in, like, Boston and New York City and Chicago, where they have still a somewhat sizable staff, but the economics of radio are such that you can't afford that many people anymore.
Why did that
happen?
I mean, people are listening to the radio, right? I mean, they're driving in their cars.
They are.
Yeah, right?
It is the power of the economics of social media because it has taken so much money out. And think of it this way. So the advertising that you want to do, depending on your demographic, you're not necessarily going to go to AM radio to put your ads on if you're aiming for a specific demographic.
Yes.
Now, I will say, in defense of the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters, which is one of my clients, so you guys are family to me, NHAB and New Hampshire residents are robust radio listeners.
Yeah,
we are far
absolutely.
Better radio listeners than many other states. Our averages are much higher.
Okay, well, I always thought that was true, but
it's
you're
true.
Right, the social media.
We skew
media,
older, so that's why.
Well, who doesn't these days? Yeah.
But I think it's even more dramatic. More dramatic than radio is the lack of newspaper coverage You know, it's
my heart.
The Union Leader, for example, used to have 7 full-time sports reporters.
Yeah.
Now I think they're down to maybe 2 or 3 part-timers.
Yeah, the whole newspaper. Yeah. That's true. Newspaper just went south when social media.
And that's the thing. Yeah. And we really have to. We, meaning our entire collective, need to figure out how to keep that going, how to keep them alive. And I know that there are people that focus when they think about newspaper or radio or something, they think about the editorial page content.
Yeah,
and so they get fired up about the politics of a paper.
Right.
But all day long, every day, 24 hours a day, all the time, you've got a team of people in the newsroom trying to get the stories out and help to educate and inform and raise awareness and entertain and make us think and make us feel. And when that is gone, we lose a sense of ourselves.
I think you're right, but you want to know something. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I try to read. I buy newspapers, different newspapers, right?
Sure.
Like national ones and local. And I can't tell you. I don't know. Maybe they just need to redefine how they're going to write articles. Because on both sides now, you read the article and you can smell the political view in the article. And it wrecks it for me. I'm reading it and I'm like, I want to get this. And I'm like, oh, those two sentences just kill me. I know exactly where this person's going. Why did they throw that in there? And I'm not the only one who thinks that.
That's fine. But you know what? Political coverage is only a small section of the type of coverage that happens in media.
But it's not just political, Scott. It seeps into everything.
Well, I don't know what to say about that.
Broadcasters need to clean it up. Or not the broadcasters, but those reporters. They need to stick to the facts, right? And they need to stay out of any,
I guess I would need to see examples before I sort of follow you down that road.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
I see it everywhere. It's like they get their ball rolling and they'll give us some good facts. Then all of a sudden they come in with something that, you know, when you know what's going on, it goes one way or it goes. And you're like, why did you just tell me the facts? Get out of it. Just like you did when you were.
But I'm reluctant to agree with you that anything like that is widespread. Because that's going to undermine local media. You're torpedoing the credibility of all local media by saying this is everywhere like this.
You know what? And it might not be everywhere, but it's in an awful lot, and it has contributed to why people aren't buying the newspapers.
So, again, I see a difference between editorial content and the news content.
Me too.
But
but I wish it stayed that way.
Sure. I don't know that I'm willing to follow you that far down
that
the path.
That far. Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's fair
enough. I hear what you're saying, but I don't necessarily agree with you.
Okay.
And I still like you.
Oh, thank you.
How's that? See?
How could you not, right?
Doesn't that work? It's exactly how it works.
Like somebody who has their own opera company, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's not my opera company. It belongs to the community.
Oh, okay.
But somebody has to run it.
I run it.
There you go.
Okay. We have to take a quick break, one final break, and then we have to wrap things up. We could go for hours on different topics here. It's In Touch with Kale and Cormier, our special guest today, Scott Spradling, 1039 1450 1019 now in Manchester, and nhtalkradio.com if you want to listen to this program or any other of our great programs anytime you want, right here on WKXL. 1039 1450 WKXL plus now 1019. And it's the first time I'm saying it, actually.
Isn't that fun?
On this radio.
Very first time?
Today.
All
first
right.
Time I'm saying
I get a front row seat.
For Scott Spradling is here.
The first time. I love
history.
It.
For history.
Yes.
History in the making here on WKXL. So, you know, we haven't touched on exactly, you've alluded to it a couple of times, but what in the last couple of minutes we have, what are you doing now?
So I try to do a lot of consulting at this point now, and I took my Rolodex out of the newsroom just very quickly. I sort of feel like I operate in the triangle of media, politics, and business. I don't do campaign work. I'm an independent. I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and I try to just sort of be as neutral in the political spectrum as possible. But I try to help, whether it's nonprofits getting their message out, whether it's new companies coming into the state to try to build relationships to be successful, whether it's an issue that's at the state house that I feel I can sign up and believe in and be a part of, whether it's working with clients in any of those areas. I see myself as a glorified matchmaker to try to help with everything from strategic communications, crisis management, sharing good word and spreading good news. And maybe solving problems and just helping with different tasks. I like to be one of the tools in the tool shed, if you will, for people that are trying to accomplish different goals. And I can't believe I've already been doing it for 13 years.
Wow.
Time flies.
Wow.
But I really enjoy it. And almost all of my clients are either Concord or Manchester based. New Hampshire Motor Speedway is one of my clients, one of my dear friends that up in Loudoun. So I love what I do. I feel like it's almost similar to the newsroom work, because I feel like every day I'm still trying to help someone tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be in a different form or format, but it's still helping to share stories.
Absolutely.
And I'm still
great.
In contact with all the people with whom I worked for a long time. Love it.
There you go.
Awesome.
And we'll have to have you back on the show, because we have run out of time.
Oh, my gosh.
On this edition of In Touch with Kale and Cormier. And today, Scott Spradling, right here at 103.9 1450 WKXL plus 101.9 in Manchester. And don't forget, nhtalkradio.com.